Some of the common boilerplate provisions that you'll see, and once again, they're boilerplate because typically with most agreements aren't drafted from scratch. You have a model that you've either negotiated with the party before, or you've done your best to find an example of a typical agreement from another party, or you have an in-house database of form agreements that will include your boilerplate provisions. For amendments, that provision typically states that any amendments to an agreement must be in writing or in writing and signed by the parties thereto, parties to the agreement. The challenge that I see, or I've experienced as in-house counsel, is that with the convenience of email, my commercial team will call the commercial team for, that's the other party to the contract, and will say, conditions have changed. We know that we negotiated an agreement that says X, but we really needed to say why. And they will go ahead and exchange emails because they are working together, and they will come up with an agreement. It's not always the case that my commercial team will bring in-house counsel into the loop. And so long as the provision provides that you can have amendments in writing, that might be okay. But if the provision provides that the amendment has to be in writing and signed by the parties thereto, the exchange of emails between the commercial parties is not okay. So I encourage you, if you are not in-house counsel or counsel and you are on the commercial team and you find yourself negotiating changes to a services agreement, an EPC contract, a purchase agreement, a consulting agreement, what have you, that you please involve your in-house counsel to make sure that at the very least they can draft a short form amendment to the agreement to make sure that it's enforceable. Because once again, the issue comes up with you may both agree, but something happens down the line, and then there's challenges as to whether or not the agreement was appropriately amended. And so there we have it. You know, you have to go back and look at emails to see what was actually agreed, where it's more enforceable and safer for the parties to have an agreement in writing that's signed by the parties. Costs and expenses I've seen in two different forms, one being costs and expenses where the provision provides that each party will pay their own costs and expenses of negotiating the agreement. Once again, when you're negotiating something as substantial as an EPC agreement or a purchase and sale agreement, you may spend months negotiating that agreement and you may have engaged outside counsel. If you have a costs and expenses agreement that says each party will pay their own fees and expenses, then you're covered. But once again, if you've carried forward that provision from another contract without carefully reviewing the language, you may find that you've carried forward language that states that you've agreed to pay the legal fees for the other party. The costs and expenses can also typically address fees and expenses and legal fees in the event of litigation, where it would state that the losing party will pay the legal fees of the prevailing party. Question comes up as to what is meant by the prevailing party. What happens if you're both prevailed, and how are the costs and expenses divided? Are you just going to leave that up to the court to decide, or would it be to your advantage to not have that provision in the agreement at all? Arbitration, you have to go into the details as to who's going to select the arbiter and what. Are you going to use the American, AAA, or the independent, the ICC, in terms of the arbitration provisions? Who, most of the times, the parties just do not spend time thinking as to which would be more advantageous to them in terms of enforcing the agreement should an issue arise. Choice of law and entire agreement, we're going to end further assurances, we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive into. For severability, that provision provides that if a provision in the agreement is deemed unenforceable, then the remainder of the contract stays enforceable in play. The question or the issue that typically arises there is, what if the provision that is deemed unenforceable is a provision that the service provider was to provide services, or that the party receiving the services has to pay for those services? In those instances, you probably want to take a very close look at the provision to make sure that if you find yourself in those circumstances where it's a material provision that's found to be unenforceable, that you would want to make sure that the entire contract is deemed void and not allow the contract to remain enforceable for every other provision other than that one provision.